And welcome to Rewatchable number 218. Today we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 6, episode 6, All the Way, and Angel season 3, episode 6, Billy. As usual, if you would like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable, find us on this post on hypeable.com, or visit our Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. My name is Karen. I am a super fan, and I'm joined by fellow super fan Mai, and I'm also joined by newbies Brittany and Ariana. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
So we're going to kick this off with fun facts. I'm going to go first and just say that I'm back. I've been gone for a little while. Things got a little screwy. I was in New York. I saw Brittany. It was very exciting. But I'm back now, and hopefully into the swing of things, which actually feels pretty nice. I kind of miss talking to you guys about all of this stuff.
We missed you, Karen.
Thanks. I was just going to make a joke like, yeah, thanks, Karen. We're so happy to have you back. And then you saved me. So, Ariana, do you have a fun fact this morning?
Yeah, so this weekend is the weekend out of the year where it's both my mom's birthday and Father's Day on the same weekend. So right now I am at my parents' house recording in my car again.
Oh,
the old days.
Throwback.
Yeah. It's very, very hot here.
And it's early too, so it's probably just going to get worse. That was very pessimistic. I apologize.
No, that's very true. I think it's supposed to be 110 today. So.
Oh my God. Jeez. And here it's like 80 in Ohio. And I'm like, why? Why does this exist? Mai, what about you? What's your fun fact for today?
Well, I can follow up and say that my mom's birthday is also always on Father's Day in Norway.
That's so interesting.
That is a fun fact.
Wow. Cool. Do you guys do like a joint thing too? Or
no.
No. That was anticlimactic.
Sorry.
That is cool, though. Brittany, what about you?
My fun fact is that also next week, we're pushing Father's Day celebrations to next weekend, and it's my stepmom's birthday, so we are combining.
That is so weird.
Yeah, to keep with the spirit of that fun fact. The fun fact is that last weekend, I was in Texas at the ATX Television Festival, and on the final night, I went to the Battlestar Galactica reunion, and then afterwards, I met up with some people who I'd been hanging out with the whole festival, and I said something to the effect of, I don't like Buffy, and then had to explain myself to a crowd that had gathered at a television festival who all attacked me. So I miss you guys, who are much kinder to me.
Oh, no.
A crowd of people who I don't know at the television festival who, there were two people who were really willing to hear me out about Angel, and one person who said, listen, you get in touch with me. She gave me her card, and she's like, when you finish Buffy, you get in touch with me. Do not be afraid if you don't like it. I will still talk to you.
Oh, that's nice. They didn't, like, actually attack you for liking Buffy.
I said it, and then, like, three, because everyone there is there to talk television and get, like, you know, be excited about television. It was, like, one of those moments where, like, you know, the record stops and
yeah.
Head turned from like
freeze frame
surrounding tables, and I was like, oh no. It was like, and let me tell you why you're wrong.
Oh,
Brittany, have you seen the Wonder Woman script that's been going around, the Joss Whedon's old one?
I have seen tweets about it, but I've not seen the actual script, and I was going to look for it today. That's on my afternoon to-do list.
It's something else, but I think it's so funny that everyone on the internet was like, but what happened? He created Buffy. And I'm like, have you guys like watched Buffy recently? Like,
yeah. I think I'm planning on writing a feature about it next week. and what it means for Batgirl. So I need to find that and read that too. So if you find it somewhat soon, send it to me. And if I find it before you, I shall send it to
you. Talk to Danya.
Yeah, yeah. I know Danya's read it. Anyway, cool. I'm glad they didn't actually attack you. And I'm glad that you are here to talk to us about it. And yes, we will be much kinder, I promise, because I love having the discussion about it. Whether or not you liked it.
Yeah, it really made me mystery watchable because I was like, oh, well, they let me say things and tell me why I'm wrong in a kind voice.
Yay. That's what we do here. You were wrong, but at least we're nice about it. All right, let's do this. Let's talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, episode 607, All the Way. In this episode, Xander finally announces his engagement to Anya while another Summers girl falls in love with a vamp. Meanwhile, speaking of significant others, Willow is gaslighting Tara into submission. All right, so Xander finally does reveal that he and Anya are getting married. It comes at a moment where everyone's kind of chill, nothing crazy is going on yet. It's right after the Halloween craziness and everyone's kind of just hanging out. And were you guys excited that he finally told everybody?
I liked how anticlimactic it was. They were just like, yay. And then you have like Anya's like over the top extreme excitement and like, mm-hmm. you know, we need to do this, 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 and this. And, you know, Xander just like freaking out internally. And yeah. then Giles just like, and Buffy making eye contact being like, what is happening? And so it was like an awesome melding of different emotions happening in a room and just Anya being oblivious to all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and written down here, it says the only person with an appropriate response to Xander's engagement is Dawn.
Yes.
And Tara.
Yeah, yeah, they were both really excited, which is cool. The others, I think, are surprised, and I don't think it's necessarily to be mean. I think it's just, like, Xander, like, out of everybody, he's kind of the most immature, and marriage and the idea of starting a family is, like, a huge deal, so I think they were, like, shocked, but I don't think that they were, like, oh, no, this is not a good idea, because they do end up throwing the party, and it does end up being very nice, but I think it just takes a moment for it to sink in. Everyone.
I think that that's probably like a good way of putting it because like Dawn is very young and so for her mm-hmm. she's like of course you're old enough to get married
yeah.
and everyone else is like Xander's getting married. but
yeah
like I love what I thought them. Was weird is that Xander like the look on his face was not like excited. He's like we're getting married.
He looked terrified.
Yeah.
So what do you think that means? Because, like, clearly he wants to marry her. He asked. He did keep it quiet for a little while, but he did announce it to everybody. That was his decision. Anya wasn't pushing him. It was kind of out of the blue. Even she was taken by surprise. But you can tell he's like, oh, God, maybe this is a little more than I realized it was going to be.
I don't know. It worries me that maybe like he did get swept up in his emotions like she thought he was at the end of last season mm-hmm. because I do think he really, really cares about her. And there's a part of him that really wants to be with her forever. But I also think, like you said, he's might be a little bit scared about now it's happened. Like now he actually has to go through with it.
Yeah. Mai, you were going to say something?
I was going to say it. I like how Buffy's like, we got to do something about this. And what she means is throw a party.
I know. That was actually really cool. Because I was like, uh-oh. And then, no, like, they really do want to celebrate. I just think it took a moment for it to sink in.
And Giles, like, steps up and tries to be, like, you know, the supportive dad role. And, yeah. like, he even though he has nothing really nice to say, he tries to say it in the best way he possibly can. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was really cute, like, when he went and sat with him on the stairs. Because I think he could tell he was freaking out and trying to just, like, downplay how insane this whole thing is.
Yeah.
Or was he stoking the fire?
I mean, he could have been. But I like to think of Giles as just being Giles.
Yeah, that's fair. Another dynamic we got a little bit in this episode was Buffy and Spike. And I know this is somebody's favorite scene, so I don't want to talk about it too in depth, but I do just want to say that it's interesting because when they're down in the basement together, Buffy says something along the lines of how it was easier to talk to Spike when he was trying to kill her. Plus, she misinterprets his use of having a rough and tumble. And, you know, of course, he's talking about patrolling. She thinks he's talking about sex. So how do you guys feel about this? And do you think Buffy's kind of seeing Spike differently now? Or does she just expect it from him that he's always talking dirty and that there's an ulterior motive there?
I don't think there was an ulterior motive for him in this episode. I mean, I think he was just being a nice guy who has a crush on a nice girl and but doesn't expect anything out of it. I don't think he's like, oh my God, if she comes here, she loves me.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, Buffy's attitude has sort of changed.
Yeah, I feel like she's no longer, like, she tries to still be her like initial reaction is always, you know, like to be on the defensive with him. And it's sort of weird where he's like able to like disarm her by not like, you know, making a threatening comment like, oh, like I could like just cut your head off right now, you know, like he used to, like, you know, mm-hmm. he wanted to kill that was his like number one priority, is always kill the Slayer. And now it's sort of just like, I'm really just here for some supplies, like. And she's like totally thrown off by that. And yeah, like you were saying, that one line where she's like, it was easier to talk to you when you were killing me, it's because she like has those punches in her arsenal, and now it's sort of just like, I don't know how to make normal conversation with you, even if she's not reading into so much of him, like, you know, fawning over her as much, because he's not even doing like that, you know, like, I mean, he's like literally just there to get something and offers help for her to find that like mandrake root or whatever it is. So it was like, he was being so normal, and for her that's weird, like to see Spike being normal. He's not on an extreme anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything's changing a little bit. I had to catch up on 8 episodes or so of both these shows because I was away. So I kind of had the whole thing all at once. And the way that he looks at her just kills me.
The head tilt.
Oh, God. It's the worst. And his eyes and just like the subtlety of it and everything. And when he's being overtly flirtatious, like, that's nice too, that's fun, but when he's really subtle about it and it's just in his eyes and stuff, like, you can tell how much she means to him. And I like watching that play out on screen. Mai, we'll get a little bit more of your reaction when we do favorite scenes for that, but I want to move into a big part of this episode and something where I think we're going to have plenty to say, which is Willow is starting to rely on magic a lot. She's basically using it for everything now. And she doesn't understand Tara's worry for her, because magic comes easily for Willow. And she sees it as a convenient solution, whereas Tara is like, but it's dangerous, something bad could happen. And Willow is very arrogant about it and saying, no, nothing bad's going to happen. So Tara tries to have several mature conversations with Willow about her use of magic. And Willow just sort of blows up on her. And Ariana, I have a feeling you have a lot to say about this. I think everybody does, but kick it off with you.
I mean, I feel like I've already said all that there is to say. Like, every episode I come on here and I'm like, Willow's terrible, guys. She's terrible. But, like, she is. She's terrible. I don't know what to say. I mean, I think it's nice that you think she doesn't know what she's doing. I personally do think she knows what she's doing, as was shown in the last scene in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think this is a really toxic, abusive relationship. And this episode reminded me of last season when Tara was like, hey, I like the way you're using magic is dangerous. And she's like, why can I never be lesbian enough for you? and that was like not what she was talking about. But I don't know what else to say anymore. Willow is awful. She abuses Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Before it was just mentally. This week it was actually like psychologically, like physically, like everything. She's awful. Mm-hmm. I have nothing else to say.
And we can talk about that final scene now too, because it's obviously relevant. That is incredibly invasive. That is taking away somebody's willpower and agency and feelings. And what she did, I don't think anybody can really defend that. I mean, Willow is in the wrong here, and what she's doing is quite terrible. I know that there are definitely people who don't like Willow. I do still like Willow. That also comes a little bit in hindsight, because I have seen the whole series and everything. But what she's doing here now is gross, and I would never defend that, because it is definitely wrong. But I will be interested to see what you guys think as it progresses, for better or for worse, because there's definitely a little bit of both coming. But Brittany, do you have anything else to add to that? Does this make you as angry as it makes the rest of us?
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And going back to that last scene, Willow was just there for Tara as she went through this whole psychological trauma. And now she's using magic against her. Like, I don't understand how she thinks that's okay. I get the whole, you know, if I could decorate a whole house for a party with a wave of my hand, oh, you bet your bottom dollar I would do that, because it would be so much easier and it's cool and it's not hurting anyone. But then you have that scene against watching her slowly progress even further, you know, like where she wants to just send everyone in that room who's not 15 to a hell dimension for, it'll only be for a fraction of a second. And Tara's like, it does not matter. Like, you don't do that. And she really is like making her magic be the most important part of her personality. And it's not, I mean, she has a lot of other bad personality traits that I've
oh my God.
And go off
like magic. You know what I mean? So her attitude is matching the way she speaks now, which is something that I really picked up on, where her like gushy, like, you know, kindergarten level vocabulary is just melding with the way she's behaving. And it's really now amplifying what about Willow bugs me. And just that final scene, like we were saying, really drove it home this episode. So I'm hoping either she does something and it has consequences, and unfortunately they're going to be bad if we ever need to get Willow to learn something, because I feel like that's where the story needs to go. And I don't want it to go there, but I also don't want this, like, she thinks she's being innocent, but she's not. She's sure her eyes aren't like glazing over, and she's not like, you know, dyeing her hair black and like, you know, being creepy in a corner with like a magic ball or anything, but she's getting there. She's on that path. She's totally turning into evil Willow, even though we don't really, like, you know, she's still dressing the same. And especially in the beginning where she's like angry, she's yelling at the witch who dressed up like her. And because that's like what she's becoming. And then you have that little girl, and that's who she thinks she is. She thinks she's that cute little witch who's just like, I need cotton, like candy corn. And that's who I am. That's my personality. This is the witch that, you know, that I see myself as, whereas like everyone else sees her as that other girl who she's like screaming at about misrepresentation.
That's a great point. I did not pick up on that at all. And I mean, honestly, like, I don't know if that was done on purpose, but even if it wasn't, like, yes, I absolutely see that. It's interesting.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I don't want to defend Willow or anything like that, but I think Brittany also brought up a good point, and I'm curious what you think about it all in hindsight and stuff, is like, Willow hasn't met any consequences yet. And I think that feeds into her arrogance, and that feeds into her desire to do everything with a wave of a hand, because whereas Giles has firsthand experience with magic and how badly it can go wrong, Tara is one way or another very aware of the laws of nature and how you can't mess with them. Willow doesn't get it yet. And again, not excusing her behavior, but I think that is the reason why she acts the way she does, is because there has been no consequences. So if there hasn't been, like, and she does have an arrogant aspect to her personality, that's the reason why she's acting the way she is. And I just wanted to know if you had any further thoughts on that.
Not on Willow specifically, but I think it's significant that Tara's response to how Willow is treating her is to regress. Because when she's speaking to Willow, she's starting to stutter again. Mm-hmm. And that's how she talked to her family. And when she first got to know Willow and the Scoobies, she's not as confident as she used to be.
Mm. And to be honest, Willow drags her down. I mean, she's mean to her and she dismisses her. So I'm not surprised at all that that's happening.
It's just, it's really unfortunate. Mm-hmm. I don't see how their relationship can come back from this. Like, for me personally, I don't see how Willow can come back from this unless we find out that she's been, like, possessed by, like, demon thing. Like, I don't see how she can come back from this. It's so awful.
I mean, obviously, the way that you see the show and everything is yours alone, so I can't say, like, oh, yes, it's totally going to get better. But there's enough coming that I think it's going to complicate things, again, for better or for worse. And it will be really interesting to see how you guys take that and where you decide to place Willow.
Once complicate everything is a great word.
Yeah. So strap in, because it's going to get really interesting. I do want to switch gears now, though, and talk about Dawn, because Dawn is kind of the other half of this episode, really. We see her in the beginning steal a coin out of the magic shop, and she lies to everybody and says she's going to go over to her friend's house and spend the night there, when in reality they kind of did the pitting the parents against each other thing, and they went out with a couple of boys. Dawn and her friend Amber Tamblyn, and they engage in Halloween hijinks, and it's kind of awful. What did you guys think of seeing Dawn like this?
I was like, finally, we have Dawn. Like, you know, she had her lip gloss on, her hair's nice, she's rocking that Hello Kitty top.
You know? She looked really different in this episode. She looked kind of badass.
I thought it was actually pretty great. I enjoyed this episode not just because it was more of a, like, monster of the week type thing mixed really well with, you know, this idea of Buffy still having to watch out for Dawn and be the adult in the situation, and also deal with everything else that's going on with friends getting married and, like, seeing, you know, two different sides of things going on at the same time. So with Dawn, for example, like, it was finally like, okay, good. Like, Dawn is growing up under, like, she's still trying to have a normal teenage life in the midst of all of the stuff that's going on to her, with losing her mom and her sister being the Slayer and, like, dealing with monsters every now and then. So I liked the whole plot line of her, you know, going out with this guy and then setting up that, you know, you think the old man is going to be the villain of the week, but then you have the, you know, you have the boys are vampires and they want to go parking, but the all the way doesn't mean what all the way I thought it was actually a really good plot line for her, and for once I was like, all right, let's watch what Dawn's doing for a little while. And it's not just like, you know, waiting for that scene of, like, Spike treating her like his little pet because he loves her and wants to protect her, which I love all of those scenes. It was just finally something different, you know, which I appreciated.
I don't really like is strong, but I like Dawn. I think that she's nice. I don't really understand all the hate for her, because I know, like, in fandom everyone, like, hates Dawn, but I think she's fine. She's a nice little girl. But this episode did kind of creep me out, like, once we got into the deeper like, oh, I could turn you and we could be vampires forever. And like, once I realized that guy was a little bit older, quite a bit older than Don, it really creeped me out because...
Like Angel?
Yes, but at least like Sarah Michelle Gellar, when she was playing a 15-year-old, she was like 19. So it was more like palatable. But like Michelle Trachtenberg looks 15 because she is 15. And so that was really creepy for me.
Yeah, this is really interesting to me, this whole dynamic here. And I just want to say quickly, like, I remember hating Dawn. Right now, I don't hate Dawn. I don't know what it is. Maybe something comes later that will trigger me, but I'm not sure. But right now, I think she's a young teenager, and because she's gone through so much crap, she's being rebellious. So even though she can be kind of whiny and annoying sometimes, I think that's realistic. I think it's true to life. She's a little sister. That's sort of her job on the show. And seeing her in this way, and also seeing her off by herself, is really interesting because she's not putting up a front for, I mean, I think she's still putting up a front around the people that she's hanging out with, but clearly this is a path she's interested in exploring to see if she wants to be this kind of person. And I don't think she's as bad as the other ones. And I think she's, you know, she does have a moral compass. So in the end, like, she's not going to probably be as terrible as they would, but we don't get that far because they get staked. But the really interesting thing here for me too is that, first of all, Dawn's first kiss is a vampire, so yes, she is a true Summers girl. But aside from that, when he is talking about turning her, and once she finds out that he's a vampire, did you guys notice that she was kind of entertaining the idea?
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting. I mean, clearly she knows how dangerous vampires are. She was worried. She did try to run away. But she also kind of got sucked in by his words.
Well, I was thinking about it. Dawn's main, like, vampire knowledge, I feel like her main influence, so this is what a vampire's like, is Spike. And Spike is pretty cool. He's nice to her. And he gets to live in a dungeon and wear interesting clothes. So,
and she grew up with Angel,
right? Exactly. And she doesn't have a lot of experience outside of that because she's always being pushed to the back and being protected. I think she's aware that vampires are evil, but because she hasn't come up against them in the same way that the others have, it's almost like that, you know, growing up where your parents have wild tigers and all of a sudden, like, you're out in the jungle and you come across a tiger and you don't realize they're not like the ones that you grew up with. It's kind of a weird metaphor, but it works. So yeah, I think like she logically knows these dudes are bad, but at the same time, she's like, but maybe not, because I've met vampires who are not bad. So maybe he's not bad either.
Yeah. And I think there's a huge appeal to her in that vampires are like so strong and fast and cool, and you know, she's always felt like, well, I guess I gotta wait here for Buffy to save me, like, what's she gonna do?
Yeah, and exactly.
I actually think that would be a really interesting development to have to see, like, the Slayer deal with her vampire's little sister.
Oh boy. This is also the first time Dawn staked a vampire, and it was kind of badass. I really liked the way that they did that, because you think, like, she is getting sucked in by his words and all of that, and then she's like, no, I know what this really is, and then poof.
And it's not a pencil.
What was it?
It's the arrow that Spike releases when he gets tackled.
Really?
Yeah, because it has fletchings.
Oh, I definitely thought it was a pencil.
Everybody does.
That's cool. I actually made a joke because Kristen and I were watching this together. I laughed when he got tackled, and I was like, that thing went off too. And yeah. Then, oh, well.
It's been in every single review and recap for like 20 years. It's a pencil, like when Willow did it in Choices. No.
Cool. I really did not know that. Did you guys think the boys were evil? Or were you... did you think the old man was evil? And then were you surprised when the boys ended up being the bad guys?
I'm not gonna lie. When the old man got into his house and they were all like the circus trinkets, I paused the episode and I like did like that little skim at the bottom where like the little scenes pop up and you can see into it, because if there was a clown, I wasn't watching the rest of it. I was just reading. I was like, nope, I don't deal with surprise clowns, so I'm going to skim this before I watch it. and I didn't see, like, you know, the boys as vampires or anything, because it was just a few, like, I only paid attention to the scenes where, like, the guy popped up, and I didn't see any clown makeup, so then I went back and hit play. And I was like, okay, all right, now that I know he's not a clown, because the circus thing, like, threw me off. It's, like, very creepy where he's, like, humming thing, and the head is cut off, and, and switch where the boys are actually the vampires. And, I mean, they were evil to begin with because, you know, like, you have that other guy who was dating Amber Tamblyn who was, like, you know, just creepy in general. Like, teenage boys are terrifying. Mm-hmm. So even if they weren't the villain, they were the villain at some point.
Also, they were, like, vandalizing homes, which I never understand. Why is that fun? Like, I don't get that. It's fun to be mean.
Some people like to watch the world burn.
Some like to watch the world learn.
Yeah, it was a great plot twist, though, because they definitely set up the guy as being creepy and possibly evil. And, you know, he's alone on the street. And then, yeah, he's alone on the street. And he walks into this kind of creepy house. And you're like, okay, this is definitely, like, we know who the bad guy is here. And then when the camera turns to the one kid and he's got the vampire face, I just turned to Kristen. I was like, plot twist. Because it's pretty shocking, but I think they did a great job with it. I'm glad they took it in that direction.
You didn't say that.
Then it was so sad because you realize he's just like a lonely old man who wanted some company.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he got eaten.
I'm going to be honest. I'd forgotten who was the villain, so I thought that he could still be bad.
Yeah.
But it was so sad when he was, like, taking the tray fell and the tinfoil fell off and the just Rice Krispie treats.
Yeah, I know. They were so cute.
Oh, I was like, he was, like, a little delusional, but also, like, I felt so bad. He was so lonely and alone and just wanted to entertain.
He just wanted to give people his Rice Krispie treats. He worked so hard on them. Oh, well. So after all of this is over and everybody's kind of back, and Willow and Tara are fighting and then not fighting because Willow cast that spell, Buffy kind of dumps responsibility onto Giles to punish Dawn. And I think it's really clear what's going on here, that, you know, Buffy is stressed out. And she's not ready to be the mother. And she looks up to Giles as the adult of the group and expects him to help her out. Do you think this is reasonable on any level? Or do you think she's just being kind of terrible right now?
This bothers me most because this is what Joyce used to do. When she would be like, oh yeah, Giles can take Dawn to the mall and go shopping. And I would be like, Giles is not Dawn's parent. Like, what is happening? Which I feel like Buffy's doing a little bit of that. I mean, obviously I have more sympathy for Buffy because she just got back from being dead. But it is annoying.
Yeah, I find it annoying mainly because we just, like, every other episode I've been on since Buffy's been alive has been like, well, Buffy's now in, like, you know, she's taking on so much and she's doing this, but she's doing a great job and she's really acting like an adult and being the parent. And then it's like a complete reversal in one episode where she's just like, no, actually, I'm going to let Giles deal with this. And, like, for the whole time, we've been talking up how, like, much pressure is on Buffy, and that still exists, all of that pressure, but to have this sudden, like, okay, Giles, you deal with it, and then, like, I feel like that, like, just wiped away the past, like, 6 weeks of us being so on Buffy's side and coming around to like, you know, oh, she's dealing with bills and she is stepping up and she's taking herself to the bank and she's thinking of solutions and doing a really great job at all of it. And then to just have her like shirk this responsibility. And they even showed in the like previously on Buffy stuff, you know, her telling, being the adult and telling Dawn, like, they will take you away if you don't go. Like, she steps into that and really owned that role, not necessarily like, I don't want to say over Dawn, but set herself up in the role of guardian and protector and, you know, kind of like what I say goes in the house, because you are still a child and I'm a child, but this feels like something that Buffy could handle. And for her to give it to Giles was really weird, because this is something that was right in Buffy's wheelhouse.
I understand, too, like, if she had been like, can you come in with me to help me?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think Giles initiated this behavior by giving her the money, though?
No, I don't think there was a way around that. You know, like, I don't... Maybe she interprets it like that, but I don't see a way...
I don't think that was his intention any means, but I think that's how she views it, is like, oh, he saved me once, you know, he's willing to be a part of this family in this way, in this role. So I think like he inadvertently kind of encouraged this behavior, but clearly is not happy with the outcome.
Yeah.
I think though it should be very, I mean, maybe it's not obvious to her because she like loves and idolizes him so much. But to me, I feel like it's very obvious that Giles has no interest in being a parent. Like, he does not want to be a parent. I mean, he left. When Buffy died, he left. He didn't stay and help with Dawn. I don't think that's a role he wants.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of Dawn, though, I mean, she kind of gives him the whole, like, is this the part where you tell me you're not mad, you're disappointed? And he's like, yeah, minus the not being mad part. Do you think she's learned her lesson?
No, she's a teenage girl.
Yeah. She's a teen on TV.
Absolutely.
So we can expect more Dawn drama.
Yeah, but probably I'm hoping more like Spike steps in to save her. Like, you know, he just happens to be walking around and being like, Dawn, are you supposed to be here?
Maybe, like, one of his rivals, like, gets interested in her and he has to be like, he's not a good guy, Dawn.
Oh, that'd be so great.
God. All right, let's move into favorite scenes now. Mai and I are totally on the same page. Our favorite scene collectively is in the basement between Buffy and Spike. So, Mai, why did you like this so much?
Bell, neck, look into it. Come with a nice leather collar, does it?
Oh, my God.
And then he goes on to, like, the stuff he's there to get. And I was going to pay for it. And then she just looks at him. I was going to nick it because that's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Their conversation and their relationship right now is so easy. And it's so much easier because she doesn't have to put up a mask for him. And also she's kind of accepted him for who he is. And he doesn't have to like throw that around anymore. Like, he's much quieter now. He's much more reserved, and he still has that snark that made us fall in love with him to begin with, but he owns it in sort of a different way. It's not as obnoxious as it once was, and just their easygoing camaraderie, like, I'm really here for it. Like, romantic stuff aside, I like seeing them be hesitant friends, and
he's almost bashful and...
Yeah,
I don't know.
He's definitely changed, and I really like it.
Newbies? And also the what she thought versus what he meant.
Yeah, exactly.
I think her death really impacted him. Like, it's almost like this is, having her back is all he could ever wish for, and now she's back, and he's like, I'm fine, I'm content. Mm-hmm. Like, you're alive. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, he doesn't need all the rest of the stuff that he clearly wants, because just having her there is good enough. And that's really mature for him. So, kudos. Ariana, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was when Buffy discovers Dawn and then starts yelling at her for first parking with the vamp. And when she gets called out on her own history, is like, well, you just met this boy. And then the vampire was very defensive. He's like, we've seen each other at parties.
Yeah.
Oh, shut up.
It was great. The back and forth between Buffy and Dawn was good. Dawn's definitely got a little more of a personality right now, and I'm really into it.
I love how Dawn tells the vamp to shut up. It's like, shut up, you're not helping.
Yeah. Brittany, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was when all the vampires are surrounding them, and she's like, what, did everyone just come? Like, she was asking all of them, like, who's here to, like, you know, gang up on them? And then there's, like, that one couple who, like, it was just there to park, and they, like, raised their hand, and she's like, okay, you guys can run now. The fact that they, like, got out of their car and joined this, like, circle of people, I just thought it was really cute and funny, and that way, yeah, way to diffuse that moment.
I also want to give a mention to Giles in the cemetery when he falls.
Well, classic.
Yeah. Kristen turned to me and was like, it was like Liam from Teen Wolf.
I'm in a hole.
Fell in a hole. That was great. Yeah, that was cute. All right, going to favorite lines now. Mine comes near the top of the episode when Xander announces his engagement and Giles is still trying to take it all in. They're like, Anya and Xander kind of making out, and Giles takes off his glasses and starts cleaning them. And Buffy just turns to him and goes, is that why you're always cleaning your glasses? You don't have to see what we're doing. And he just says, tell no one. Oh, Giles, he always has to put up with these kids. Poor guy.
The many functions of the glass cleaning.
Yes, yes. Mai, what was your favorite line?
Mine is also at the top of the episode, and it's the tiny witch. Ooh. Excuse me, do you have any candy corn?
It was so cute. And, like, Willow just melts, and I'm like, yes.
She's so tiny.
I know. Ariana, do you have a favorite line?
I liked it when Xander called her Dawn's antics dipping into the classics.
Yes.
Yeah, they used to do that, but they saved the world, so.
Mm-hmm.
Except Buffy, she pulled that trick to hang out with Angel, so. Hmm.
Yep.
Busted.
Brittany?
Mine was Giles' words of comfort when he sits down next to Xander and says, Anya is a wonderful former vengeance demon. I'm sure you'll spend many years of non-hell dimensional bliss. So
it was a valiant effort.
Yeah, he tried.
He did try. Awesome. Okay. Brittany and Ariana, I know Buffy is obviously not always your favorite, but overall, did you like that episode?
Yeah, it was refreshing after so many unrefreshing episodes. I liked it because it kind of got us back into that, like I was saying earlier, there's that overarching, oh my God, adulthood, the pressure of adulthood, but also the monster of the week vibe. And you're also advancing Dawn's character and you're laying the seeds for a little bit of Buffy Spike stuff. And I didn't hate it. So it was, which is good. That's
high praise, honestly.
Yeah, we're digging ourselves out of the hole here.
Ariana, what about you?
No, I didn't like it.
Okay.
Willow is like too much for me right now.
It's not
anyone else's fault. It's just Willow's fault.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I think when, you know, so if anyone here listens to Once a Ball, I'm ranking this on a scale of How I Rank Once Upon a Time episodes, where I rank the episode without the Rumple scenes. I'm ranking the episode without the Willow scenes.
Right, right.
So it's like one of those things where I like block it out in my mind, and that's how I judge whether or not I like it.
Yep, that's fair.
Yeah.
I do that a lot too on Runcible. Okay, cool. Well, let's jump into Angel episode 306, Billy, now. In this episode, the women folk are left to fight off the men folk as Angel's hellish past comes back to haunt him in the form of Billy, a misogynistic man with a deadly touch. In other news, Wes is crushing on Fred so hard he wants to cry, and Angel and Cordy are falling in love over sword fighting lessons. So the first thing I want to ask...
I didn't realize how like phallic that sounded until you just read it out loud.
Oh god. Before we get into actual discussion points, I just first want to say like this episode is actually like really heavy, and like I saw some stuff going on Twitter, Brittany, I think it was from you, just being like this was a really real episode and it's a lot to take in. But overall, did you guys like it?
I think it's hard to say I liked it. I appreciated it.
Do you think it was a good episode?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
But I can't say that I enjoyed it. It was, mm-hmm. I think it was Danielle who said that it was something to watch, and I definitely agreed on Twitter. It was just, it, as I was watching it, I was like, this is, I don't know if it's because of what's been going on the past 7 months, but it was so hard to watch, and it was great acting by everyone, and I think that the message was really there, but it was also like not one that I really ever want to watch again, because it was seeing Wesley, and you know, it was very uncomfortable.
Ariana,
I really liked this episode. And I did watch it more than once.
Wow.
Whoa.
I liked that I was like on the edge of my seat, and I don't know, like, am I weird? I really liked it. I felt like it was really empowering because the girls all got their confidence in the end.
Yep, they did. And I love that. I definitely want to talk about that.
Mostly without the men folk.
Mm-hmm.
They did it all on their own.
I don't think it's weird to like this episode. I am surprised that you've already watched it more than once, just because it is really heavy. Like, it's a lot to take in, but I don't think it's weird at all that you like it. Mai, how do you feel about it?
It's hard to watch. That's it.
That's fair. That's a fair assessment. All right, let's jump into the opening scene, because as soon as I saw it and I was like, oh, Ariana and Brittany are on this episode, this is going to be great. I'm so excited. Angel is teaching Cordelia how to sword fight, and yes, the innuendos abound. Her reason is she doesn't always want to be waiting for him to save her, and he might be a little bit sad that she doesn't always want him to save her, but she is clearly fully capable of learning how to defend herself and her cheerleading skills, and being able to know choreography and remember choreography and moves is a huge
asset.
Thank you. It is a huge asset, and she looks pretty badass. Like, sometimes her form was better than his form, and I was like, yeah, she knows what she's doing. But clearly the whole big thing to come out of this is that, you know, it's not subtext anymore. It's full on text. So
go team.
yeah. Ariana, gotta start with you. Did you love this?
Oh, I did. I mean, first of all, she's so good at it. I don't understand why they didn't, like, this should have been done seasons ago. Why has no one taught her? Why has no one been like, you know what, Cordy? It seems like you get into trouble a lot because you're always hanging out with us. Maybe we should teach you how to actually defend yourself. But oh my gosh, I loved it. And like, I was watching this, I was like, this is, yeah, like you said, like, this is not subtext. This is full on text. Like, they're flirting so hard. No pun intended.
It's a beautiful thing to watch. Brittany, did you love it as well?
Oh my God. It was so fantastic. And I think the line where, you know, you were mentioning before about how she was like, I can't always be waiting around for you to save me. And she sort of just lays all of it on the table too, where she's like, and I might actually have to fight you. So, you know, she obviously can't be waiting around for him, because what if he's the person who she has to kill?
Exactly. And you know, I love that, like, this is a continuous threat without being in our face about it. But like every once in a while, it feels like every couple of episodes, we get this reminder that Angel actually is dangerous or has the capability of being dangerous. And it's so easy to look at him and see, you know, the way that he acts every day and kind of forget what he is capable of. So the idea that they remind us like this, I think is really smart, because we get complacent with Angel, but it could change at any moment.
And it's good that she's not complacent. You know, she does always walk around with that little voice in the back of her head being like, remember what he can do. So I think that's good that someone's on their guard, because I feel like it is, especially for us too, like it's just easy to let Angel be Angel because he's so cute and then he smiles and then you forget everything. And, you know, she doesn't let that happen, which is good.
That must be so weird, like for them, because like obviously like she's very aware, I think, that someday he's going to come back. Like it's some way or another it's going to happen. And she's seen it a few times now and have like this big dork in your, I guess it's not her house, but like this, he's so cute and walking around and with his dorky smile. And she's like, knows he could turn. That's so creepy and sad.
It is. Yeah. Especially because they are close, you know, they're best friends. Like, I don't think anybody can deny that. And the idea that your best friend could potentially be the one who kills you. And like, I mean, he's sort of a different person when he's Angelus, but the fact that he wears the same face, that is so disconcerting. And yet she handles it very well. And she's very pragmatic about it, which I like.
Angelus is always inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always watching. Waiting.
Creepy.
Well, he is.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Yeah. I really like Cordy's role in this episode, not only for her later interactions, but her interactions with Wes, because it's become very clear that Wes has a crush on Fred, and Cordy is the only one who's aware of it, and she encourages him. And I really loved seeing that, you know, she didn't pick on him really. And she is kind of like, look, life is short. Like, you kind of just have to go for it. If you're interested in her, then just tell her, just see what happens, and kind of gives him the courage to do something like that. Mai, I really want to know what you think of the dynamic between Wes and Fred.
Oh, Wes and Fred?
Yeah.
Well, no comment?
No comment. What about their dynamic in this episode? Before things get crazy.
Oh, before things get crazy. He's cute.
He is cute.
And she's cute, so they're cute.
Yes.
But he's awkward.
Yes, he's very awkward.
He's not a rogue
he's
demon
always
hunter.
Been awkward.
This one wasn't as bad as his awkwardness when he was first trying to get with Cordelia. Like, that I literally could not
be.
No, I could not look at the screen. Like, a secondhand embarrassment to the max.
So cute.
Speaking of saliva.
Why you were embarrassed too, because now I think, like, I loved it when it was happening, but now looking back, I would be like, ew, that's Cordelia. She's like, sister.
Oh, I don't know. God. I'm still rooting. I mean, I'm totally on the side of Angel and Cordelia being together at this point, but something secretly inside of me is like, okay, but remember Cordelia and Wesley had that thing? I think I liked it.
Are you guys excited that they seem to be switching tactics, so it's less about Angel and Fred now, and maybe they'll go in this direction with Wes and Fred?
I'm glad that it's less on Angel and Fred, but I think it's too early to see if I like this. Because it's not a great start for
Wes. No, it's not.
So I think I'm going to need a little bit more before I'm not totally sold on it yet.
What's hilarious is, I'm not even joking, I was watching this episode with Kristen and talking about it being too early to tell. The second it was clear Wes had a thing for Fred, she turns to me and she goes, oh my God, she's done for. She's done for already. She's invested 100%. And it was so great watching that. And then horrible because of what happened the rest of the episode. She was like, no, but why? But she's so into it already.
I can't wait till she's on.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
I think it's interesting to see like Fred's similarities to old Cordelia's similarities. I think like Wesley does have a little bit of a type. Kind of naive, pretty young brunette with long hair. But she kind of now is, I think, starting to fulfill the role that Cordelia used to in season one. Like, she's the comedic relief and she just doesn't understand sometimes. She's so sweet. Whereas Cordelia has matured so much and now she's kind of like the mama boss of everybody.
I'd compare Cordelia and Anya more and say that Xander has a type.
Oh, I can see that as well. Yeah, but I definitely see the comparisons between old Cordy and Fred. And yeah, I think it's cute. Definitely interested in seeing what you guys think going forward with the Wes and Fred thing and how it plays out or how it doesn't play out. You don't know. This could be the end of it. No spoilers. No comment. All right, let's talk about the crux of the episode, which is that Billy is back. And the reason why Cordelia feels so guilty is because he was released in order to save her. So Billy has sort of this half-demon thing going on. His touch taps into the primal misogyny of men, and we get a lot of stuff about what it's like to be a battered woman and what it's like to deal with the shame, the guilt, and the fear that that kind of invokes. And I didn't realize this. Honestly, I don't know much about this at all, but I was reading through the wiki page because I like to know any fun facts that I'm either not aware of or have forgotten. And on the wiki page, it says, this episode invokes the Kennedy family, who also have prominent political connections, just like the senator. William Kennedy Smith was a nephew of former Senator Edward Kennedy and was accused of sexually assaulting a woman in a 1991 Palm Beach, Florida case. Smith was acquitted of the charges. And then there's more here. According to the Wikia, the scenes of the upstairs Hyperion Hotel, Fred hiding, were shot at the condemned Ambassador Hotel in L.A., where Robert F. Kennedy was fatally shot. So I had no idea there were Kennedy family tie-ins here, but that is certainly very interesting and certainly a pretty bold statement. I think this whole episode was a pretty bold statement. They really didn't pull any punches. I really didn't want to say that. I'm sorry. So yeah, it was heavy episode. What did you guys think about Billy being back? Was he scary? He was almost scarier for me because he was in the background. You know, he touched somebody and then he walked away and they did the dirty work, and that was a little more disconcerting than if he had been in everybody's faces the whole time.
It was scary that he could do this to nice people without them wanting it. Like even Wesley and Gunn both become aware of what's happening and they can't stop it, which is horrifying.
Yeah, and there no one could stop it. Like, even when Wes was in full, I guess, primal mode. I hate to, I, I don't like the phrasing of that because I feel like it's not
primal. It makes it sound like it's an inherent quality in a man.
But when Wes is, you know, going after Fred, there's literally nothing that anyone can do. Like, there's no reasoning. There's no, like, you can't lock him up. He's, like, cutting through the wall, like, in The Shining. You know, like, it's, like, not, it was terrifying because it's not just mental. It's very physical. And, you know, your fight, you have this Fred who's very intuitive and, like, able to see that something's going on, and she's clever and can outrun Wes, but she's terrified. And then you have, like, Gunn, who realizes that it's, like, it's coming, and but he knows that there's nothing he can do, so he's trying to fight it and long enough to let Fred knock him out. And it's, you know, it was very, very disarming to see their reactions to, like, you know, Wes, who didn't know it was coming, and then Gunn, who knows it's coming, and then, you know, you have Angel, who, for some reason, it just doesn't affect. So it was very uncomfortable, especially, like, you know, like you were saying, the innocent people who, like, the cop who, you know, arrests him, and he, like, beats the woman in the car, and then you have, what's his name, Gavin, whatever, something, the guy in, who beats Lila. It was, yeah, I didn't like that he was sort of on the outskirts. I think it would have been not easier to watch if it was just one villain, because, you know,
it's still awful.
Yeah, you can put everything on him, but the fact that you're watching these other people do it too just made it even worse.
Yeah, it's definitely hard to see people that you love and that you've seen for years now turn this way. It's very disconcerting. I do want to talk about Lila, though. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Mai.
I think one of the things that really stuck with me about Billy is the thing that his cousin Dylan says, is everyone in the family knows the rules. Mm-hmm. You never leave him alone with your girlfriend, keep him away from your pets, and don't ever let him touch you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they are that line about him coming for money, and, like, you know, you just leave it on the table, you never hand it to him. And just the fact that this, and, like, they said that this family is huge. He's like, I have hundreds of cousins, like, which one is it, you know? And that this whole big, and that, powerful that, collective just bends to him. Because
they that couple making out, like, should you tell them or do you want me to teach them about public affection? Yeah.
That part about his cousin, though, is so frustrating to me because it feeds into giving this guy power by not standing up to him. And I realize, like, in this case, obviously, like, he has demon blood or whatever, so, like, it's kind of difficult to do that. But in terms of the metaphor, the people who stand on the sidelines and, you know, they don't believe what he's doing is good or right, but they don't necessarily speak out about it, are as much of the problem as anybody else. They're not part of the solution. And so it was interesting to see this guy talk about his cousin like this and, like, you know, yeah, this is what you do. And, you know, he doesn't like it, but he's also not doing anything about it. And that's dangerous.
Yeah, but Billy also claims that he doesn't hurt anyone. He just likes to watch.
Wow, so clearly.
Yeah, don't leave him alone with your girlfriend and keep him away from your pets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little scary.
It also made me think, like, this is kind of silly, but, like, is part of why he's like this? Because, like, nobody ever hugs him, like, his whole family.
Yeah.
Like, they don't touch him.
I mean, that goes back to, you know, nature versus nurture and all of that.
His female relatives could touch him. That sounded awful.
True. Yeah. Yes, it does. But I know what you're saying. Yeah.
They could hug him. Be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad touch.
It feels like this is that they're saying that this is kind of an inherent quality in some people because it's literally in his blood. it's not something that somebody did to him that made him this way in terms of, like, you know, neglecting him or beating him or something like that. It's literally inside of him. So I feel like it's a message about, doesn't really matter how many hugs you give somebody like this, if there is something wrong with them, if they have a mental condition that makes them this way, you know, they need to find help in a different manner. I really want to talk about Lila, though, because she was so interesting in this episode. She becomes one of Billy's victims, and she gets beaten pretty badly. And there's some background info here. It says that according to writers Tim Minear and Jeffrey Bell, the early fight scene between Lila and Gavin was written to be much more vicious, with lots of punching and blood. The scene was revised to show Gavin throwing her against a shelf and attempting to strangle her, though in a later scene, it is clear that Lila took some heavy blows to the face. Her face is really messed up. I mean, they don't go lightly with the makeup and what happens to her eye and everything. I mean, she was beaten pretty badly. And I don't think anybody here, correct me if I'm wrong, really loves Lila. I think she's an interesting villain, but I don't think there's a whole lot of sympathy for her outside of this episode. In general, because she kind of keeps going back to Wolfram and Hart and keeps doing terrible things. She wasn't like Lindsay, where, you know, he kind of wavered here and there. She even has a line about that. But in this episode, there's none of what she did before mattered, because she didn't deserve this. And it was so real that it really struck me. And I loved the scene between Cordelia and Lila.
Yeah, there was, so when I was at the television festival, I went to a panel called Understanding the Enemy, and it was all about, so the creators from like Battlestar and, you know, Ron Moore, he does that, he did Battlestar and Outlander, and the creators of The Americans were there, and they were talking about how, you know, sure, like right now, like especially within the case of The Americans, for example, you have like, it's, you're rooting for the hero who are the Russian spies. So are they a villain and a hero? And like, you're understanding the humanity of the people. And I think that's what they're doing with Lila here, is like, sure, we hate Lila because she's a horrible person, but you see that she is so, like, still so human in this episode, and none of that is okay. Like, this whole thing that happened to her is so horrible, and it doesn't make it any easier to watch just because we hate her. It's still so, so horrible, and I think that watching this episode just made me think back to that. Like, these people are still human. They're inherent, they're evil, and we aren't rooting for them, but there's still that line of, this is not what you do to another human being.
Exactly.
Well, I kind of think you guys are giving her too much credit. To say she doesn't deserve this, I don't want to say anybody deserves to be beaten to within like an inch of their life. I don't think that's something you can deserve. But she's not innocent in this. She brought him out of a hell dimension, knowing what he was. She went and manipulated and almost killed Cordelia to get him out of here. So she did that on her own. That was her choice to do that. But what, she didn't think she was going to suffer the consequences? Like, oh, he's not going to hurt me, so it's fine, as long as he only hurts other people.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of arrogance going on there. She does think she is outside of the law. And speaking of which, that's kind of how I see it. Because, yeah, I think it's, well, first of all, Brittany, you said what I wanted to say much better. So thank you for that. But also, I agree with you, Ariana, that she's not innocent, not one bit, except I think that because she is so human, you know, any physical violence seems really exaggerated. We see demons killed all the time, but they're demons, or they're vampires, they're soulless. It's different. She's very much human, and I feel like she deserves to be punished, but I would hope that, you know, her punishment comes in form of, you know, a judiciary one where she's put in prison or something like that.
Yeah. Or like even sent to a hell dimension, even if it, like, you know,
as long as we don't have to see her in pain, it's okay.
No, not necessarily like a hell dimension where she's being like physically attacked, but at least, like, you know, getting a taste of her own medicine there. Maybe she's like put to like work or something, who knows. As long as she doesn't become a queen like Cordelia, then
I
also don't think that she's like as smart or like clever as she thinks she is. Like, she's she's so dumb. She's that girl in front of the computer playing golf. He's golf. Like, that's to me who she actually is. And she thinks she's this badass, but like, she can't even walk in heels, which is like, fine, I can't either, but then wear flats, girl.
Ariana, what did you think of this scene between Cordelia and Lila?
You know what? I didn't love it. And then later I found out that it was written by Joss Whedon, and I was like, that makes sense. I thought it was like too much. I was like, Cordelia, you're so much better than this girl. Like, why are you even talking to her?
Yeah, it does say here too, that this is the 50th episode of Angel. David, Charisma, and Alexis all also appeared in the 50th episode of Buffy, Doppelgangland. And Joss Whedon wrote two scenes for this episode, Angel at Lila's apartment and Cordelia at Lila's apartment. I really liked this scene, to be honest, and I think a lot of it derives from Cordelia's strength. She hasn't been afraid for a little while, I think, but the confidence that comes with her training is really starting to show already. And her guilt and her desire to make this right kind of gives her this stony facade that I'm really into right now. And I just love that she walked right into Lila's apartment and was like, look, we have to talk. You know, you think that just because he's this person that, you know, he doesn't deserve to be punished for this, because he's a client and he's high profile and Lila talks about her job and all of that. And she's like, that doesn't really matter. Look in a mirror, like, look at what he did. It's not okay. And I just really appreciated her strength here. Although I think it is interesting. I'm not sure who put this in the doc, but any thoughts on the vicious bitch comment?
I don't like it. I should like it because I think the way that Cordelia says it is a compliment. Really hate how everyone keeps, well, mostly, I feel like Joss, whenever he writes an episode, he brings up like, Cordelia used to be so awful. And I don't think you can compare like petty mean girl in high school to woman mm-hmm. who kills people. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think those are comparable. Yeah. Even Cordelia at her worst was like trying to save people and helping out Buffy. So it really bothers me when they keep bringing up her past. Like, it's so terrible.
Yeah, they're not on the same level.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have to admit, I really loved the vicious bitch comment. And it goes back to what you were just saying, that she uses it as a compliment. And I think she's used that kind of on herself before, too. And it's this reclaiming of power that comes with this supposedly derogative term, except, you know, bitches get shit done. Like, it's unfortunate that is the perspective people have for women who are strong and powerful, but I like the idea of reclaiming that word for something that continues to give you strength. All right, so let's talk about Wesley. It was really difficult to watch, and for a little while you're not quite sure what's going on, or at least that was my case. When he first makes that comment of like, you know, we're gonna have a problem if you lie to me again.
It still
didn't occur to me. I was like, wow, like, you know, I'm surprised he's talking to her like this, but like, clearly he feels a responsibility for the team and he wants to make sure that everybody's safe. And it still just didn't click for me for some reason. And then a little bit in, you're like, oh, wait, no, run. I actually said that. I was like, run, Fred, just run. But what did you guys think of seeing this side of Wes?
Well, I think, well, first of all, I don't think it's a side of...
No, but this version of him, yeah. I guess.
The version of Wes, I mean, great acting on his part, but
oh, yeah.
He was terrifying. I did not enjoy it because it's so not Wesley. And then I really appreciated the scene at the end of the episode. I know I'm jumping ahead a bit, but it really drove home how much this is not Wesley. Because he is scared and shaken and doesn't want this to be the person that people see when they look at him. And he thinks that that is what Fred is going to see. And it's what he sees now. And I don't like that. Not that I don't like that he remembers. I guess I appreciate that he remembers because it's reminding him of what he's not. But it was also just, it was not fun. This whole episode was just not fun for Wesley because he just had that cute moment of, you know, Fred giving him the slides and they were all, like, he's trying to just still be professional and her boss without revealing anything. And then all of a sudden this, he has no control over what's revealed to her
mm-hmm.
and it's not what he wants to reveal. So he's very guarded and trying to keep his feelings in. And then all of a sudden he's unleashing this whole other version of himself that he has zero control over and it's not who he is. So it's like letting his guard down in a bad way. And it was,
yeah,
it was not great. Not great.
I want to bring up too, another thing from the wiki is that Tim Minear and Jeffrey Bell had originally written the scene in which Wesley menaces Fred and then slaps her to come right at the very end of Act 2 and then cut to a break. Joss Whedon rewrote the scene to have Wesley say, lie to me again and we're going to have a problem at the end of Act 2. And then after the break, menace and slap her, which was actually more scary. Both Minear and Bell agreed that the sequence worked better for the thrills and scares. And it does. Because that line kind of sends a chill down your spine. And even though I wasn't like cluing in at that moment, I was like, that is a side of Wesley that we don't really see. Usually he is kind of silly or serious, but he's never menacing like that. And it was just, whoa. And I think it does kind of build that suspense a little bit more and makes it much creepier.
Yeah. And, you know, Tim Minear went on to have a great career with American Horror Story after creating scenes like this. So
what I found really interesting too was that Gunn realizes he's infected and he fights against it. We hadn't seen that from anyone else. And I know they talked about the different ways that this can affect people. Sometimes it's instantly. Sometimes it takes several hours. Gunn, maybe because he knew about it ahead of time, was able to kind of take a step back and be like, oh, no, this is bad. But the way that he kind of flitted in and out was really interesting to me. And I wonder if that means anything about his personality.
It also took a lot longer with Wesley and shorter mm-hmm. with Gunn.
Yes, yeah.
I think it was more like what I picked up on there was the fact that he was aware that it was coming. So like, whereas Wesley was like doing his work and it was slowly like sinking in but he was preoccupied where I think Gunn was like more focused on, okay, something's going to shift and I'm going to feel it and I'm going to know it's coming. And mm-hmm. so that in my head
was also super high because he's like, there's a man who's trying to kill him.
Yeah.
Yes.
How about Fred, though? Fred was so great. I mean, she runs away. She hides because she's obviously terrified and trying to keep herself safe. She doesn't want to knock out Gunn, but, you know, she does because, hello, would like to survive. And in the end, she saves herself mm-hmm. By building a trap for Wesley. And I think that is the only way this episode could have gone because of the message that they're sending. And it was so important to me that she saved herself. So I was really, really happy with that.
How did that not kill him?
He's resilient.
Hard-headed?
I think it was very important that she saved herself, especially for going forward. They're like, she's going to have to, you know, recover from this. Like she was saying at the end of the episode, like, we all took a few days off. Mm-hmm. You know, she was able to recognize the danger and know that it wasn't personal to the fact where she could, like, these people are becoming her friends, where she could actively knock out her friends because she knew that it wasn't them. So she was able to have that separation and take action against it. Whereas Wesley's having a harder time coming back because he's not able to see that it wasn't him at this time, at least.
Mm-hmm. And kind of on the same, in the same vein as that, Cordelia tracks down Billy, and, you know, we kind of already talked about Billy not being able to infect Angel and all of that. And you kind of see Angel saving Cordelia, except in the end, Lila is the one who shoots Billy, which again, I really loved because she was the one to take him down, having been his victim. But also, I thought it was a little bit interesting how at the beginning of the episode, Cordelia is talking about not wanting to be saved by Angel and wanting to be able to do that for herself. And then he kind of does swoop in anyway. So did you feel like that was sending a mixed message, or do you think it's just going to take a little bit longer for Cordy's ability to save herself to kind of kick in?
I think she could have saved herself, but I think that they, like, I hate Lila, so I kind of hate that she saved Cordelia, but I understand that. I don't think they want Cordelia at that dark place right now where she could kill a human. But, like, she could have killed him. She had, like, she was right there in front of him.
Yeah.
If she wanted to, she could have.
And he wasn't human. Just half.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he still looks human.
Mm-hmm. And it definitely would have affected Cordelia, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it would, but.
Yeah.
He had it coming.
That's true.
My biggest disappointment, I don't know if we've reached this yet, but my biggest disappointment was that Angel didn't turn, which sounds awful.
Yeah.
But I was, like, really excited for him to turn because I think I realized, like, I enjoyed Wesley being evil because it kind of reminded me of, like, when Angelus is evil. Like, the consequences are not as real because it's not really Wesley. It's just, like, this thing that's being mean and looks like Wesley. And so it's interesting to see cute little Wesley be horrible. And
what bothers me about Angel not turning is more to the science of it, because I feel like they can never decide, like, okay, what does affect him? What doesn't affect him? They never really give a reason one or the other. It was like in the episode where, you know, he switched bodies with the old guy. He was like, that's not going to work on me. And then it worked on him. And then in this one, we think it's working and it's not. And it just never, it feels like very convenient, very contrived.
Yeah. I just think it was a cop out because they were running out of time or whatever. And didn't want to deal with Cordelia having to fight Angel.
Yeah, and it would have been nice to see that from her, too, because she also makes the comment about, you know, he's not always going to be there to save her. Sometimes she might have to fight him. And I feel like that would have been a really great full circle moment. It was just such a missed opportunity.
I'm also so curious now, like, now I'm kind of happy that they waited to bring out Angelus, because I feel like when he comes, it'll be really exciting. Like, now he's built all these bonds, and, like, remember how he would taunt Buffy with the like personal information.
Oh, I remember.
And I wasn't even, like, invested in Buffy then. Now I'm, like, so invested in these people. I'm like, ooh, what's he gonna, like, do? How's he gonna play with them?
Oh, imagine what he can do with, like, Lorne. Oh God.
You guys are a little bit sadistic. Not gonna lie.
So good.
He is, yeah.
Oh, he's so, so, so good.
Yeah. Well, what about we shall see.
Who is Oz? Oz doesn't exist anymore. I've given up on Oz.
Oh.
I can't get my hopes up that Oz will come back, so.
Yeah, I know we kind of did touch on this, but I think it's really important to spend a little more time talking about Wesley's reaction. He cries. He's really upset. And he's not only upset at what he did to Fred, because he obviously likes Fred, but he's upset because he thinks this was a part of him to begin with that was brought out of him. Whereas Fred says, no, you know, Billy put something in you that caused you to react this way. This doesn't mean that you are a bad person. And I want to know what you guys think of that. Do you feel very strongly that it was something Billy brought out, or do you think it was something that he put in?
Well, I think because I kept trying the whole discussion to be like, it's not primal, that I'm on the side of it's something that Billy put in. I think it could work both ways, where he puts something inside of someone that makes them behave that way, but also if it is inherently in someone, like, for example, if he touched that cab driver, that angel, like, you know, harassed a little bit on the street, I feel like it would amplify what's inside of that man, because I do think that there's something inside of that man that is already awakened and could have been amplified by if Billy had touched him. But if for like Wesley, for example, maybe there's something in there, but I don't think it's, I don't know. I don't want to believe that it is inherently something that could be awoken inside anyone at any time.
What I think he does is I think that he brings something out of the person, but then twists it and makes it evil. Because, like, for example, I don't think Wesley's reaction would have been so extreme if it had only been like, say there was like a delivery girl inside there, right? Like, I don't think he's gonna freak out to such an extent, but because he has such strong feelings for Fred, like, then those strong feelings then get manipulated and twisted into bad feelings.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Mai just put something in here as well, and I think this kind of might help to explain it, because we did get an explanation really of why Billy can't infect Angel. He says, I never hated my victims. I never killed out of anger. It was always about the pain and the pleasure.
Oh my God, that line.
Yeah. And so I feel like the show is kind of telling us that there is an anger inside of these men. But I mean, nobody's perfect. Everybody gets angry. But again, Ariana, like you were saying, he might bring that out, but then he continues to twist it, because Wesley is clearly, from what we've seen, not this angry all the time. And
back in season one, he tortured a bookie.
What was the reason for that? I don't remember.
I'm not sure about the reason, but he nailed the man's hand to the wall and then he...
Oh, yeah.
Tugged on the arrow.
I do remember that. It was kind of hot. But, I mean, yes, but that's what I'm saying. Like, everybody has
something... Oh, yeah, it was the demon wrestling...
Yeah. Thing. Like, nobody's perfect. Everybody has anger, but... that anger isn't always that close to the surface. And so I do think that even if Billy taps into something that's there, he does twist it to an extent that makes it not only bad, but evil. I mean, it's very in your face.
Very in your face.
Yeah.
Like, quite literally in your face.
Yes. Okay, let's move on from Sad Wesley and talk about our favorite scenes. Mine kicks off with Cordy being amazing at sword fighting because of cheerleading. I just really loved that. Her confidence, her form. Her form was so good. Like, I'm still not over it. I was looking at them side by side, and I was like, Angel, you can learn from Cordelia. She looks so good right now. And I really love, again, the kind of strength that this training has already given her. So it'll be interesting seeing what happens going forward. And my, yours is great.
Mine is when Angel finds out that Cordy called him melodramatic.
Yes, the look on his face.
And it's the back and forth between like, what?
It's exactly the same face that he makes when in the last episode he says, you think I'm fat?
Yeah.
And the same that's in someone's favorite line.
Yes. I just realized that all of our scenes are Cordy and Angel scenes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I don't think you could pick a favorite scene from anything else in this episode.
Adriana?
Mine was the opening scene when the subtext becomes text for me. I'm just calling it now. I'm like, this is happening. I've decided.
And Brittany?
Mine was, and I specifically made sure to mention that it was the later training scene between Cordy and Angel because of that line that you brought up earlier where he was like, oh, I only torture, like, I didn't hate anyone. I just liked the pleasure from the pain of it. And he's just like, so nonchalantly, just like, you know, in his form with this nice little shirt on.
He looks so like, good.
He just like drops it into conversation like, yeah, you know, that's just how I was. Good old days.
And she just like takes it in stride.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's comforted.
And a little creeped out. She's used to it though. Favorite lines. Cordelia at the end with Billy, she has the crossbow against his neck and says, actually, I'm feeling superior because I have an arrow pointed at your jugular, and the irony of using a phallic-shaped weapon, not lost on me. It was just a great line. I really liked it, and I just love how cool she was. My, yours?
The opening scene, Angel and Cordy. Don't stiffen up. Yeah, you either. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
I did not get that until you just said that.
I don't think I noticed it, like, in the episode either. But, like, how do they get away with this stuff? Probably because we don't notice it right away. And then going back, you're like, wait a second.
As Natalie said last week, I don't see how no one has called them out on this yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to go back because I went, wait, what? Did they just... Yeah.
Yeah, they did. Mm. Ariana?
Mine is when Cordelia's talking about how Angel just expects her to, you know, stave until he swoops in to save her. And Angel's little face, he's like, you don't think I would? What? Save you.
Aww.
That was so precious. Like, her, like, but I would save you. You like know that, right?
You think I'm fat and melodramatic?
I would save you. He's so Cordy worried. Angst. Yeah, he's so worried about what she thinks of him.
Love me,
Brittany.
Mine was when they're playing video games. It's like right at the beginning of the episode and it's like kind of off camera and he's like, you know, Gunn is like, wow, you're dead. And he's like, I'm tired of being the dead one. So great.
I love those like downtime scenes where they're just hanging out. They're just chill. They're just who they are. The world's not ending. Yeah. It's just, it's really great to see that dynamic.
Being pancakes.
Yeah. All right, that wraps up our discussion for these two episodes. As usual, if you'd like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find us on this post on hypeable.com or rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And as always, we really do love iTunes reviews and appreciate when you can give us 5 stars. If you rate us 5 stars, then I will give you sword fighting lessons as long as you promise not to stand up.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
All right, let's get into some listener feedback right now. Brittany, I feel like you should read this tweet.
Sure. So Ashley Barnes at Ash B. Tweetin, oh, it's cute, said, I just got to episode number 82 where you're talking about how you can't do Gilmore Girls because it's too many seasons. If only you knew. Yeah.
Hashtag Buffy.
Guys. Oof, Buffy's been like 3 years and Gilmore Girls would be a lot shorter because, first of all, we could do two episodes and it's only seven seasons. Like, now I'm able to say it's only seven seasons because Angel really pushed us over the frontier. Yeah, no, Gilmore Girls seems totally feasible at this point, but again, it's been done, so on other podcasts.
So, we're doing like 12 short shows in a row. Like, yeah. I'm just throwing that up here now. Like, first, like one or two seasons, like 12 of them. So we can just keep moving and changing things. Because even, I mean, obviously I love Buffy and Angel. And I love that we're doing this, but it's a lot.
Yeah. And I think I was explaining the process to the, you know, the people who had gathered and Texas, and they were like, I think part of your problem is that you're, you know, you are taking so long to do it that I'm
what? Like, that's the way it aired.
I know. That was the argument that I came back with. I'm like, well, first of all, it took the people who were watching it 7 years to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, I'm having like, I like it more when I can talk about it. So I think I might have not finished it if I sat down to binge it. I think I probably would have stopped after season two.
Yeah.
Been like, you're saying, no way.
That's ridiculous. They're like, you're thinking too much about it.
Yeah.
Like a show that really decreases quality, I feel like, if you have to not think about something to enjoy it.
If I just tuned it out, I don't think it would have been this.
Yeah. Worse. And it's, I mean, it is long and it's a lot of work to do this. And sometimes we get frustrated. And I know when you guys don't particularly like episodes, it can be very frustrating to be moving this slowly. But I think moving this slowly also forces us to talk about it and forces us to figure out what we like and don't like about it. Mm-hmm. And even if that doesn't necessarily change how you feel about the show overall, I think that it's important to do that anyway. And I mean, I know some people are like, if you don't like the show, like, why are you still watching it? That sort of thing. I think it's almost more interesting that you guys have problems with it because it forces super fans who sometimes I will admit that I have, you know, a nice shiny glaze over Buffy and I don't necessarily pick up on some of the things that you guys do. So it forces me to look into that. But I think it also forces you guys to defend your reasons, and that makes for a more interesting discussion. So yeah.
And like with Gilmore Girls, when the revival was happening, Gilmore Girls was so precious in my mind that, like, you know, all of a sudden being on Twitter, because there was no social media around when I was watching Gilmore Girls at the time, it existed in the tiny bubble in my head and with the two friends who watched it that I went to school with. And so, you know, when you're rewatching it later on, and, you know, there are so many problems with Gilmore Girls, but the conversations, like, for example, if I were to go back and rewatch, and I have watched it a million times, but with Will and Grace, the revival coming up, I am choosing to actively not engage with anyone because I don't want it shattered. I don't want to, you know, go into conversations where people don't like it, and that's fine. That's a choice that you can make if you do love something that much. But I think by actively engaging in conversation when you know that there's the possibility that people won't like something, it takes a totally different type of reaction, you know, to take in criticism. And I don't want to take in criticism with Will and Grace, especially if people don't like the revival episodes and I do. There's the possibility that I'll hate all of them, but it's very slim because if Eric McCormick's on screen, then chances are I'll watch it. I'm not too worried.
Yeah. That is very fair.
But yeah, so like with Gilmore Girls, like I don't think that if, for example, we were to ever do a podcast about it, that I would that I would do it just because it's not a type of conversation that I need to have about the show. You know, if I,
that's good, because I have lots of issues with Gilmore Girls.
Yeah. And a lot of people do. And I do now in retrospect. Jason Stiles is the one for Lorelai, and that relationship was shat on by the creators. So I'm not over it. I've come to recognize that in my old age.
Yeah. And, yeah. You know, hindsight's 2020, which is why it's so interesting talking about Buffy now, 20 years later, you know?
Yeah, and some of the stuff that happened is still so relevant.
Yeah.
So influential. And, you know, it's not lost on me that mm-hmm. this was there before everything else.
Yeah.
It's also, I think, harder to watch having not seen it and seeing what's come after it. You know, like...
Yep.
There, this is the seed, but I've enjoyed what's come after it more because
exactly
the first thing that I've watched.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
Nostalgia is one hell of a drug.
It is, as Trainspotting 2 pointed out.
All right, let's finish up this episode with Ariana's answers, Brittany's brainstorms, Buffy 607 once more with feeling, Angel 307 offspring. What do you got for me?
I think that there will be zero singing. I do not foresee any musical numbers happening.
Okay.
I think it's going to be a straight narrative.
Okay. That's fair. Week
type thing.
That's a good assessment.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't think anything special is happening next week at all.
Okay. Ariana, you think the same thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Any other guesses? If it's not going to be music, what could it be?
Well, I think Angel's going to be a great musical number. I think Darla's going to go into labor and, you know, just be singing her heart out about...
Oh, God, I forgot about Darla.
Oh, did you? Well,
I totally did. I was like, offspring. I don't remember this one. Now it makes sense that it could possibly be...
Well, that's the connection I can make with the title,
Offspring. Yeah. Honestly, I don't remember, so like that's
Angel's
not even
gonna
a spoiler.
Lose his soul. He didn't lose his soul this week, so he'll lose it next week when he lays eyes on his beautiful green baby.
Why is the baby green?
Because it's a half demon. Well, it's like full demon because they're both demons.
Because he's having a baby with Lorne.
Yeah, that was why I was like, Lorne's green.
Angel what? Is green in his purest form. Okay, we learned that.
Oh, okay.
Wasn't he gray?
He's green.
Greenish gray, maybe? I did Lorne forget green. About that. Yeah, that's true.
It's not easy being green.
I did forget about that, though. Yeah. Cool. Okay, good guesses for next week. We'll just have to see what happens. Maybe there'll be a crazy twist.
It'll be so boring.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening as always, and we will talk to you again next week. And until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Mai.
I'm Ariana.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.